Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. I am again privileged to have Dr. David Dodick as my guest for this podcast on Brain Matters. Dr. Dodick is the Chief Science Officer and co-chair of the Atria Academy of Science and Medicine. He's the Chief Medical Officer at Atria Health. He is the co-director of the World Federation of Neurology's World Brain Day and co-chair of WFN's Public Awareness and Advocacy Committee. He's the co-founder and the chair of the International Concussion Society and the chair of the American Brain Foundation. Welcome back, Dr. Dodick.
Thank you so much, Joanne. Great to be back with you.
Now, you know this. I started this Brain Matter series because I think it's really important for my listeners. They're leaders in business, industry, government, but I think it's important for them to understand more about brain health and to understand the impact and the interrelatedness of brain health to all health. And I'll tell you, I didn't understand all the nuances of brain health until I started consulting with more and more organizations that focus on this aspect of health and related aspects. So I want to talk today about brain disorders. And I have a very basic, very elementary question. How do you define brain disease and brain disorders?
You know, Joanne, I'm often struck that sometimes the most basic and fundamental questions are sometimes the most challenging and difficult to answer. And this is an important question, although it seems very basic and fundamental. But I would answer that by saying brain disorders are conditions that affect the structural and or the functional integrity of the brain. So what I mean by that is the brain is made up of a variety of different cells and wires or cables that connect one cell to another. And most people have heard of neurons, primary brain cells, of which there are about 80 billion in the human brain, 80 billion in the human brain. And each of those cells makes about 10,000 connections to other cells. So just think about that. One of those 80 billion connecting to 10,000 others. That's about 7 quintillion connections. I don't even know what quintillion is. It's one more than quadrillion, which is one more than trillion. So it's a lot. You could wrap those connections around planet Earth 4 times. And that's all packed into that 2-pound organ sitting inside your skull. And each of those neurons operates and fires about 100 times per second. So if you've heard the phrase, the brain is more complex than the universe, now you begin to understand why. And so these cells are not only structurally connected through these wires and cables, but they're functionally connected in that they communicate via electrical and chemical signals. So when one neuron fires, it spreads an electrical current down its wire. And at the end of that wire, it releases a whole soup full of chemicals, what we call neurotransmitters. And they impact the 10,000 cells to which that one cell connects. So you can imagine that anything that disrupts these cells will disrupt those connections and will therefore disrupt, or impair the ability for cells to communicate with one another electrically and chemically. When that happens, people start to experience dysfunction or impairment or symptoms. Mm-hmm. And so there are developmental disorders that affect the brain that may be genetically predetermined, such as autism, that affect the brain structurally and functionally. There are degenerative diseases of the brain, like Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease, that are progressive and may be a result of both genetics and the environment, and can be influenced, as we discussed in your last segment, by the presence of other diseases, such as diabetes, that can affect those neurons and other cells, as well as the connections that they make. And then there are other disorders like brain tumors and infections in the brain and stroke, a lack of blood supply to the brain, if you will, migraine, traumatic brain injury, and hundreds of others. So that's how I would define what a brain disorder is. And sometimes a lot of these disorders are structural, but you don't necessarily see them on a CAT scan or an MRI scan. So migraine, for example, is a problem with brain function. So that means that you can remember all those quintillion connections.
Yes.
We can't see those on an MRI scan. And so you're looking at the structure of the brain rather than the function of the living brain. And so that's why when people with Parkinson's disease, for example, sometimes you'll do just a static MRI scan of the brain and you don't see anything. Because there's a problem at the chemical level, right? Where cells that produce a certain transmitter called dopamine are dying off, but you can't necessarily see that on a scan. So sometimes people are dumbfounded by they're having profound neurological symptoms, whether it's migraine or Parkinson's disease, just to pick two, and they get a scan of their brain and it's like, you can't see anything. You can't see anything wrong. And so that's why I think it's important for people to understand that brain diseases and disorders can be both structural, or they can be functional, or they can be both, obviously, because if you affect the structure, you ultimately end up affecting the function. So I hope that helps clarify.
Yes, it really does. You mentioned the last time we were together that there are a lot of people with brain disease and brain disorders. Can you give us a rough number here in the United States? Well, actually, I'd like a rough number in the United States and a rough number globally, because I have listeners literally all over the globe now.
So basically, Joanne, it's 1 in 3. So if we have 350 million people in the United States, it's 1 in 3. So, you know, approximately 120 million people are experiencing a neurological disease or disorder. Globally, we have about 8 billion people on the planet. So 1/3 of that is over 2 million people who are 2 billion people, I'm sorry, who are experiencing a neurological disease or disorder. And as I mentioned to you in the last segment, although I may not personally as an individual be experiencing or are impaired by a neurological disease or disorder, I would challenge any of your listeners to think about whether or not they know have a family friend or a family member who has experienced a brain disease or disorder. I certainly have in my family. I'll bet that you have in your family. And I'll bet that many people who are listening have in their families. So nobody escapes the clutches of brain diseases or disorders. So it's germane, it's relevant, and it's important, I believe, to every person on planet Earth. Because, and I say that because if you have a brain, the health of your brain, whether or not you're destined to develop a neurological disorder, is crucial for your ability to function on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. It's important for your ability to talk to people, to understand what people are saying, to work, to love. It's important for everything that we do. So the health of your brain, if you have one, is important. That's mm-hmm. why I think neurological disease research and brain health optimization, which is one of the things I'm focused on now in my new position, Joanne, we've established a preventive neurology clinic, a program. And I think in the near future, in the next 5 years, for example, there will be brain health clinics being established all over the country and all over the world. Why? Because we now recognize it's possible to optimize the health of the brain to prevent many of the neurological diseases that devastate so many people around the world. So in the same way we have preventive cardiology now, and we put people on statins, and we put people on medicines to lower their cholesterol and lower their blood pressure and lower their blood sugar, all of those things are important for brain health. And so we now recognize that optimizing your metabolic and your cardiac status is crucial for maintaining the health and integrity of all those cells in the brain and the connections that we make. Because I know that you and I, in the next 20, 25, 30 years, want to A, still be here, and want this to be functional.
Yeah. I have a friend who says she's 81, and she says, I'm glad I'm still here, and I'm glad I know I'm here.
Well put.
Yeah. What are the most common brain disorders?
I think the most common and most disabling brain disorders in the United States and globally, in fact, are stroke, Dementia, including Alzheimer's disease. It's not the only dementia, but it's the most common one. Vascular dementia is the second most common one. And vascular dementia, you can imagine what actually contributes to vascular dementia: diabetes, hypertension, obesity, high cholesterol, smoking, lack of exercise, same things that are important for heart health. So the heart and the brain are connected. And what's important for heart health is important for brain health. So dementia, migraine, very common. And in fact, under people under the age of 50, it's one of the most disabling, if not the most disabling, medical condition around the world. So very common, very disabling. Meningitis, infection in the brain, epilepsy, Parkinson's disease, spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injuries are common. Not just in athletics and sport, but they're common, more common actually in everyday life, whether it's a motor vehicle injury or a fall or a slip on an icy street, even in the area of domestic violence, which affects one in four women across the world. 70% of the time, they experience a concussion because the head is often a target. People might not recognize that. Multiple sclerosis, brain cancer, motor neuron disease like amyotrophic lateral sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease. And then people don't think that brain health and the nervous system also extends into the nerves in the body and the muscles that to which they attach. So peripheral nerve diseases like neuropathy and neuromuscular diseases like myasthenia gravis and so many others are indeed neurological diseases. So I'm listing common ones, but there are hundreds of others.
That's fascinating. Are there people who we know are more susceptible to brain disease?
Yeah. Genetics plays a big part. Environment plays a big part. And by environment, I mean your occupational and your social environment. So we believe that environmental toxins now may be very important for some neurological diseases. I'll give you an example. Parkinson's disease is the fastest growing disease, neurological disease on planet Earth. And it's thought to be due to the environmental toxins that surround us every day. So environment and genetics play a crucial role. And then, as I mentioned earlier, other metabolic diseases can have a profound, profoundly negative effect on the brain. And I've listed some of those, like diabetes and hypertension and tobacco use and lack of physical activity. Inactivity is a big one. High cholesterol. So those are some of the things that can have, that put people at risk of brain disease. Hypertension, for example, high cholesterol, diabetes is a major risk factor or major risk factors for stroke. So managing those can reduce. I mentioned in in your earlier segment that 80 to 90% of stroke is preventable.
Which is
And it's,
fascinating.
which
Who
is
knew?
fascinating. And I think I
Who
mentioned to
knew?
you earlier, Joanne, when I started in in neurology 34 years ago, I remember being told that there are 800,000 strokes in the United States every year and 80% are preventable. And today there are still 800,000 strokes in the United States every year. And more than 80% are preventable given the advances in therapy. So low-hanging fruit, if we just did the simple things right by managing people's blood sugar, by managing their blood pressure, by managing their blood cholesterol, by identifying, recognizing those who have heart disease, if we just did the simple things right, we would prevent many neurological diseases.
So I know that you're passionate about research, and I know that you're involved with the American Brain Foundation and that they fund research. I want to know what kind of research is happening right now to find cures. And do you mind being specific and talking about maybe one or two of the studies that the American Brain Foundation is funding right now, today?
So I think I might have alluded to the fact that the American Brain Foundation funds research across all neurological diseases. And our philosophy is cure one, cure many, meaning that if we understood the mechanism of a single disease, like Alzheimer's disease, for example, then we might understand the mechanism for other neurological diseases, because there's no question that some mechanisms are shared across different diseases. Now, that may come as a surprise to people, but one of those mechanisms, as we talked about last time, is inflammation. So we are investing heavily right now in a project, an initiative called neuroinflammation. Why? Because inflammation in the brain, and in fact, inflammation outside the brain, in other parts of the body that can influence the health of the brain, can have a profound effect on that, not only the health of the brain, but can put it at risk of developing certain brain diseases. So we are heavily funding research now in neuroinflammation, because we believe it plays a role in everything from migraine to traumatic brain injury to Alzheimer's disease and many other diseases in between. So that's one of the areas that we're funding right now. The other area that we're funding is we're trying to discover a biomarker, or we're funding research, I should say, with scientists who are trying to discover a biomarker or a diagnostic marker for something called Lewy body disease, which is a common form of dementia, probably the third most common form of dementia. And Lewy body disease is closely related to Parkinson's disease and other diseases that are what we call synucleinopathies. And there are a number of them. So you can imagine, if we were able to diagnose Lewy body disease during a person's life, because right now we cannot, we would understand better the mechanism that drives Lewy body disease. And that diagnostic marker would allow us to probably understand other diseases like Parkinson's disease and other related diseases much better. So having a diagnostic, because we don't have a diagnostic marker for Parkinson's disease yet either. So if we had a diagnostic marker that allowed us to make a diagnosis confidently and accurately during one's life, and maybe even earlier before they actually develop the symptoms of the disease, we would be able to treat the disease once it starts, but also maybe even prevent the disease from beginning in the first place. That's where we need to go, Joanne. It's in this area of preventive neurology, where we have an unprecedented ability based on modern technology and diagnostics to be able to understand who's at risk for certain diseases and then intervene early before they actually manifest the symptoms of the disease. Alzheimer's disease, for example, is a disease that begins in the brain some 20 years before the onset of symptoms. So if someone who you know has developed Alzheimer's disease at the age of 70, know that the changes began in the brain when they were 50 or 45 or 55, much earlier than when they began to manifest symptoms. If we knew who those people were, we would be able to intervene with nutrition and other lifestyle modifications, exercise. We would be able to intervene with supplementation and other treatments. And we would be able to identify those people who, as treatment advances became available, we would be able to intervene much earlier to prevent, to at least delay the onset of the disease, or maybe even prevent it from beginning in the first place. So I see a lot of research now shifting and focusing on identifying people who are at risk and intervening before they actually develop the disease. You can think of that actually as a cure. We think about cures as someone who manifests a disease, and then you treat it, you cure it, and the disease is gone. That's important. But in the future, I think we're going to be focusing on prevention of disease. Because why develop a disease and hope to have a cure when you could prevent a disease from ever occurring in the first place? Because if you have a stroke and an area of the brain dies, yes, our brains are amazing plastic adaptive organs that can take over the function of that dead piece of brain. But I don't want to lose, you know, remember 80 billion cells and the quintillion connections they make? You can imagine even a small stroke has taken out how many millions of cells and how many hundreds of thousands or millions of connections. I'd rather that not happen in the first place
Yeah,
than to
prevent
try
it.
to rehabilitate the patient after it has happened.
Prevent it on the front end.
Prevent it on the front end, because you can imagine, Joanne, if a disease began 15, 20 years before the onset of symptoms, how much damage has already taken place by the time that disease manifests. Parkinson's disease, for example, they lose these dopamine containing cells. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter, and there are cells in the brain in certain areas of the brain that contain dopamine. Did you know that by the time a patient presents with tremor or the earliest manifestations of Parkinson's disease, 80% of those cells are gone.
Oh, and they
So,
don't regenerate.
and they don't regenerate. Now, perhaps stem cell therapy and, neurotransplantation, maybe we'll be able to regenerate those cells, but right now we can't regenerate those cells. So it makes sense to identify people at risk and initiate preventive measures to prevent those cells from continuing to die and to prevent that disease from ever developing.
So I'm curious about where is the research taking place? I know that you fund millions and millions of dollars through the American Brain Foundation, but can you just tell us like what universities, what science places is this research happening at?
All over, Joanne, all over the country, from east to west, from north to south. One of the things we're blessed with and privileged to have in this country is a brain trust spread across academic institutions, universities, research think tanks across the country. It's just amazing that, and when galvanized, can find treatments for otherwise fatal diseases in breakneck with breakneck speed. AIDS, for example, is an example of that, where a community of researchers who are properly funded can come together and turn what was a fatal disease within 10 to 12 months into now a chronic manageable disease. COVID-19, the whole world comes of scientists come together from across the world, across the United States, comes together, funded properly, and in less than a year has sequenced the genetic code for that virus and has come up with a vaccine that's in the arms of people within a year of that virus appearing. So you can see what's possible when scientists across the country and across the globe come together, collaborate, and are properly resourced and funded. There's nothing we can't conquer and overcome with the right support and with the right sort of collaboration.
You have talked about cure. You've talked about cure one, cure many, cure. I think cure is a very strong word. It's a big promise. Have there been any brain diseases that have been cured?
Yeah, I think there are brain diseases that, through gene therapy, for example, that look to have been potentially cured. Spinal muscular atrophy is one example. That was it's a fatal disease, genetic disease that affects infants and toddlers. And through gene editing and gene therapy, these kids now are le leading healthy, long and productive lives. Certain epilepsies, for example, can be cured. I've seen individuals with intractable epilepsy, seizures after seizure after seizure, not responding adequately to treatment, undergo surgical excision or resection of an area in the brain that's generating all these seizures, and they're cured. They're seizure-free.
That's
For the rest of their
amazing.
life. So yeah, there's no question that, and nutritional deficiencies, for example, I've seen people with severe nutritional deficiencies, vitamin B12, for example, where once you identify the nutritional deficiency and you replace it, you prevent, or you treat that disease and reverse it. So yes, I've seen cures happen, not enough. And it really comes back to research. The only reason why we have drugs available to treat neurological diseases, from migraine to multiple sclerosis to meningitis to now Alzheimer's disease, the only reason we have them available today, and we didn't a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, is through research. And the only reason we're able to cure any disease today, even non-neuro, you know, I'm talking about non-neurological diseases now, or effectively manage them in a way that we never could a decade ago, is through research. That's the only way forward.
And much of that research is funded by the American Brain Foundation. I'd like to invite my listeners to go to the American Brain Foundation website and make a donation, because these diseases impact everyone, every single person. I think about my own family. I've told you about my brother and the strokes. I have a sister who's fallen a couple times and had a couple of concussions. My mother had those trans ischemic attacks. So I know if I have experienced it, lots and lots of other people have. And I think it's important for us to support organizations that are doing the work to find a cure, and American Brain Foundation is certainly one of them. Are there other things that people can do to support work into research to support that?
I think, you know, people can look for organizations that have a history and a track record of funding research and research that leads to advances in treatment and indeed possibly cures. And that may be organizations that, like the American Brain Foundation, that fund research across the entire spectrum of disease, or it may be individual organizations that focus on individual diseases. So your listeners may have been impacted by, either through a family friend or a family member or themselves, by a particular disease, and now they're committed and passionate to finding a cure, or at least developing advances in treatment for that particular disease. That can happen through the American Brain Foundation. It can happen through disease-specific organizations as well that focus on things like Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease. I would encourage your listeners to also look at organizations that fund collaborative research. You know, and by collaborative research, I mean researchers that are working in areas that seem unrelated, but are true related. So I talked about the influence of diabetes and hypertension and cardiac heart disease on stroke and other neurological diseases. It then shouldn't come as a surprise that endocrinologists and cardiologists are working together with neurologists to try to come together to find advances in treatment or cures for their individual diseases, but also diseases that are outside of their domain, if you will. So because diabetes has such a profound effect on metabolic health and brain health, it would make sense for endocrinology and internal medicine specialists to be working with neurologists to more effectively treat diabetes so that it doesn't have such a negative effect on the brain, for example. So looking for, and our Lewy body dementia research project that we're funding right now has pulled together experts in basic science, clinical science, and artificial intelligence, and laboratory science across different institutions from Texas to Pennsylvania to Minnesota. So different researchers in different areas doing different work with different skill sets and different tools and different universities coming together to solve a problem. So I would encourage your listeners to look at in organizations that are trying to inspire, motivate collaborative research. And so our neuroinflammation initiative, which I talked about earlier, that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're prioritizing proposals, research proposals that bring together experts and researchers from different disciplines whose work is complementary to come together to try to solve a problem.
I like that. I like the connectedness. And that takes me back to something you mentioned before. If you can cure one, you can cure many.
Yes.
I appreciate you giving so generously of your time, and I'd like actually for you to come back another time because I want to talk about the people who live with brain diseases, because everybody doesn't die from a brain disease. So I'd love for you to come back and talk about that. Are you open to that?
I would love to, Joanne.
Thank
Thank
you. Thank you again for being a guest today.
you, Joanne, very much.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.